Mailing Bad with Alan Parsons. Welcome.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Where am I calling you?
Santa Barbara, California.
Oh, I love it there. What's the weather like right now?
You know, it's actually unusually dark and dreary today. It's there's a sort of sea mist, I think. We live right on the coast, so... But it'll probably clear up later. It's uncharacteristic for this time of the year. It was 80 degrees yesterday.
Oh, my. I often go there for their film festival, and it is such a beautiful little town.
Oh, we love it. We love it. We've been here 15 years now. So.
Oh, wow. And you live on an avocado ranch. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. Organic to boot. We don't make any money at it, but it's a fun existence.
Did you realize that you were growing avocados when you moved to this ranch? Was that part of the plan?
Yes, I mean, we knew it was a working ranch when we bought the place. But like I said, it's sort of a labor of love, and I mean, I don't get my hands dirty. I mean, I leave it to others, but which is probably why we don't make any money at it. If I was doing it, if my wife and I were actually in the field working and picking and, you know, watering and stuff, we probably would make money, but... Because we have to pay others to do it all, we don't. We love it. You know, it's great. It's a great landscape here, and it's beautiful.
I bet you have a lot of people though that want your avocados.
Well, yeah, we give quite a few away. I'll tell you, and also give away other fruit. We grow lemons, limes. We grow an exotic lime called a yuzu, which is savored by a Japanese restaurant.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And I just have to ask you one other thing before we get to business here. You have a horse that is probably one of my favorite animals on the planet, the Clydesdale.
We do. He was here in California, but my stepdaughter moved. It was really her horse, and she moved to Pennsylvania, so he's back east now. But we get regular videos on FaceTime and get to see him. He's in the hands of my wife's brother.
Oh, well, he's still in the family, so that's a good thing. Where did you? Why did you name him Dante, of all things?
That was his name when we bought him.
Ah.
So it wasn't a name that we gave him, but it's a perfect name for him.
Starting off with your relationship with Sir George Martin, I know that you released a statement, and of course that was extremely sad. But I would love to know how you got your job at Abbey Road Studios. What did you have to go through?
Well, I was actually working for the company. I was working for EMI at a manufacturing plant in West London. It was a department called Tape Records. We were actually making duplicate quarter-inch reel-to-reel tapes of commercially available albums, and that included, you know, Sgt. Pepper by the Beatles and early Pink Floyd albums and so on. So I just was in this department. I sort of crossed over between that department and the record factory doing quality control there, you know, but vinyl pressing factory. And I just simply applied for a job at Abbey Road. I said I'd like to come and visit the studio, and if you'll have me, I would love to take a job with you. And I met with the manager, and he, you know, 2 weeks later I was working there in the tape library. Started at the bottom.
So how old were you at the time?
19.
Your very first job, basically, correct?
I mean, it was the first real sound job. Yeah, the Abbey Road experience was the beginning of my sound education, as it were.
So how did you move from doing the tape to doing the engineering?
Well, that was a sort of slow process of training. I mean, you know, if you're sitting on a session, you're watching engineers, artists, producers at work, and you get to know the equipment. And it was about 2 years of being an assistant or a tape op or a button pusher, as we were sometimes called. I progressed to you know, being let loose on the console and actually engineering.
So that must have been a very, very daunting thing for you to be working with the Beatles. You're only 19 years old, somewhat, right?
Yes. actually, the first experience with the Beatles was at their own studio, where they did the famous rooftop session. So I was there for that, which was an experience and a half, I'll tell you.
Tell me, I'm dying to know. Like take me back. Like what were you feeling then?
Well, I was full of the joys of being a huge Beatles fan. There I was, with the Beatles, with George Martin, with Glyn Johns, the girlfriends, you know.
The girlfriends.
I was being paid to be there, and it was just the most extraordinary thing.
Oh, man.
I wasn't paid a lot, but I was being paid.
I'm sure back then they didn't have anything like auto-tune in the studio, so...
No, they didn't. Everything was very organic and analog, yes. The word digital hadn't even been coined at that time.
Now, were you somebody who spoke out? Like, if, let's say, Paul McCartney was off-tune, did you say anything, or...?
Well, for heaven's sake, no. No, I'm the most junior person there, and I would not say a word. Maybe in later years when I was engineering with Paul, I probably wouldn't have said out of tune. I think I might have said, I think you can do a better one, Paul, or something like that. Being an engineer and producer is all about diplomacy.
Yes, I know, and you don't want to piss anybody off too much.
Right.
So that must have been like a very cool thing for you to sort of move up the ranks, work with the Beatles, and then work with Paul McCartney personally.
It was great, and we were actually neighbors for a time. We both lived in the south of England, outside London, and did one session at my home studio, which never got released. It's sitting there in the ether somewhere.
Oh, no.
Unlikely to ever be released, I'm sorry to say that.
Do you still have it?
I still have it.
Wow. Why won't it ever be released?
Because it was unfinished. It was essentially just a few ideas going down on tape. But it was not really a song, per se. It was just a couple of instrumental ideas with a few mutterings from Paul in the background, you know. But,
oh, man. I wish I was a fly on that wall. So now you're about to embark on a greatest hits tour. So what brought this on?
Not an expression I coined, I have to say.
What would you call it? What would you like to call it?
Oh, I don't know. Just the... I hesitate to say farewell tour because I'm not getting any younger, but, The Who have done so many farewell tours and the Rolling Stones have done so many farewell tours. I think it's probably appropriate for me to do my first.
Your first farewell tour.
I'm not ready to hang up my hat just yet. But, I just would have said Alan Parsons Live Project Tour. You know, I wouldn't have said Greatest Hits. I mean, but it's nevertheless accurate because it is a hit show. And we play all the most popular songs from all the albums. It's actually quite difficult to pick and choose what songs to play because there must be at least 100 songs to choose from.
I bet. And you know, Alan, those are really the type of tours that us as fans really want to see. I mean, I went to see The Who, speaking of The Who, for their 50th anniversary tour, and every single hit, versus seeing Jackson Brown last year, and I did not recognize one song, and I wanted my money back immediately.
I did the same with Steely Dan. I went to see Steely Dan, and I didn't recognize one song.
Right?
So
yeah.
I actually left. I was told even the encore was an obscure song. So.
So you know the feeling, right? You know that this is really what the fans.
I know what people want. Yeah. I mean, we deliver. We do all the hits. You know, we wrap up with the two biggest hits. You know, that's what they want.
From a musical family, yes?
I do. Both my parents were musical. My grandparents were in the theater.
Oh.
I come from a family of entertainers, that's for sure.
So has the acting bug bit you, so to speak?
It has, actually. I've together with my publicist that I've been working with for a few years now, we've been trying to get me a part in a movie. I managed to land a narration part on a film that's about to come out. It's a documentary movie called A Single Frame, which is about a young boy who's caught in the conflict in Kosovo, and they had a script which I read for them, and I got the job. So it was that's you mentioned the Santa Barbara Film Festival. It did really well there.
I didn't catch that one.
It's yet to come out.
What are your acting hopes? Like, where do you see yourself? You know, what kind of roles?
I don't know. I'm a sort of big bearded, you know, villainous looking guy. I think I'd probably be a baddie. So, you know, I'll take anything. just to say I've been in a feature film would be a great experience. I think I've got an acting coach as well who's great. He's steering me in the right direction and telling me what to do and what not to do when auditioning.
I had a huge crush on your cousin Oliver Reed, I have to tell you right now.
So does my wife. Yes, he's a bit of a good looker, isn't he?
Good looker, and you know, talk about being menacing. He had that in spades, but he was just the nicest guy. I had the opportunity to meet him a few times.
Oh, you did? Funnily enough, I never did meet him.
Really?
I have met his son, and when we first met, we both looked at each other and said, oh my God, we both look like his father.
Yeah, especially in the eyes. Absolutely. Yeah. How come you never had the opportunity to meet him? He was your first cousin, right?
He was always, you know, he was a famous alcoholic. I mean, he the only place I could have ever met him would have been in a public house somewhere. But, I don't know. There was just no contact, no point of contact to meet him, and we, you know. Probably if the internet had been more active then I might have met him. And that's how I met his son, Mark, through just finding him on the internet.
Interesting. So are you guys Facebook friends now?
Yes, we are. Yes, indeed. He lives in London, and we've made a point to get in touch every time we go there. So that's nice.
Do you get to go back to where you're from? England originally, obviously. So whereabouts?
Yes, I grew up in London, and you know, I still have family there. I have two sons living in London and an ex-wife. But we're on good terms, yeah, with the ex-wife, and even my current wife is in touch with her, which is good.
That's always a good thing for everybody to be one big happy family. Absolutely. Are your sons involved in the biz?
My eldest is a very fine guitar player, actually, and I think he should be in a band, but he's not. He's actually working for a theatre company doing production work. But
you could be in one of his plays. There you go.
Right. And the other is sort of dabbles with entertainment. He's directed promotional videos for British bands, and he likes to write a lot. So, but he's I can't say which direction he's going in. He seems to jump from one thing to another. So
yeah, they're at that stage, I guess.
Right.
Now you're a writer as well.
I'm hoping to actually write an autobiography of it eventually. I'm just too busy right now. But there is a book out there that, which I wrote with another Brit called Julian Colbeck, which is a book based on a video series which I spent 3 years of my life making. It's called The Art and Science of Sound Recording.
Ah.
It got it got very good reviews, and it's found a home in a lot of schools and colleges, sound recording courses. It's kind of educational, although it also suits anybody who has even the vaguest interest in what goes on in a recording studio.
Yeah, you have to be kind of on the geeky side, I imagine, to pick up a book like this.
Well, you know, maybe a little, but I think it satisfies the curiosity of what happens on recording sessions. Most people just don't realize what it's like, and it's actually quite difficult to capture on film. what goes on, because, you know, things take a long time. You know, if you wanted to really show what how a record is made, you need to make a very, very long movie, which would drive people crazy.
Those stories are wonderful to, like, hear about all these bands.
I think Butch Vig is involved in a studio story. I think it's being shown at South by Southwest.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about this autobiography. What, do you have a name for it yet?
No. it might be From Abbey Road to Abbey Road. The reason for that being that, you know, I had my beginnings there, and I also ended up as the boss there for a short time, as the vice president of all the London studios under the EMI banner. And I decided after a few months that the executive life was not for me, and went back to making music again.
What are you looking forward to next?
Well, we've got a couple of new releases coming. The first one is going to be a symphonic concert we recorded in Colombia. So it's going to be called the Alan Parsons Symphonic Project, and it'll be, I think they're looking for the end of May to release it. But it's a full, you know, full symphony orchestra, 70 piece, so it's pretty epic. It's a pretty epic show.
And is this original music, I assume?
Oh, it's all project music, yes. We're actually in the final stages of video editing and audio post-production for that. And soon after that, there is a deluxe edition of Tales of Mystery and Imagination, the first album, coming out with two CDs and a third bonus CD with bonus material on it. And the vinyl, this is all going to be in the box, two vinyl albums, which will be the album, the original album, at 45 RPM and cut at half speed, which is the new ultra high fidelity format.
Vinyl is making this huge comeback, and I'm so pissed off because I got rid of my record player. I call it a record player still.
Well, at least you didn't get rid of your records. You can always buy a new record player.
No, I did get rid of my records too. I know, it's terrible, terrible. But I feel like, you know, you have to stay relevant, right? You have to keep up with the times.
It is coming back. Vinyl is coming back. But, you know, ultimately, I don't think it's going to last forever. Digital technology is getting better every day. Although MP3 sounds horrible, there will one day be a good format that will be downloadable quickly.
But I don't know about you, Alan, but there's something about opening up an album cover, read along with the and listen.
That has gone, and then there was this lovely break to go and put the kettle on between sides one and two.
I love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me. You have lots to look forward to.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure, and I hope you'll come to one of the upcoming shows.
I would love that, and also I look forward to your book, so please do come back on when that comes out.
All right. So, very kind of you, Robin. Thank you.
Take care.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always milling about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.